Chapter 16. She acted wisely, bravely, and selflessly. Paragraphs 1 to 3, question A. What was it like for Esther to approach her husband's throne? Question B. How did the king respond to Esther's visit? Esther slowly approached the throne, her heart racing. Imagine a hush falling over the great royal chamber in the Persian palace of Shushan, a silence so profound that Esther could hear her own soft footsteps and the rustling of her royal garments. She could not let her attention wander to the grandeur of the royal court, the graceful columns, the richly carved ceiling of cedars imported from distant Lebanon. She trained all her attention on the man seated on the throne, the man who held her life in his hands. The king watched intently as Esther approached, extending his golden scepter toward her. It was a simple gesture, but it meant Esther's life, for by it the king excused her from the offense she had just committed, that of appearing before him without a royal invitation. As she came to the throne, Esther reached out and gratefully touched the top of the scepter. Everything about King Ahasuerus bespoke his immense wealth and power. The royal garb of the Persian monarchs of those times reputedly cost the equivalent of hundreds of millions of dollars. Yet Esther could see some warmth in her husband's eyes. In his own way, he did love her. He said, "What do you have, O Esther the queen? And what is your request? To the half of the kingship, let it even be given to you." Esther 5:3. Paragraph 4, question. What challenges lay ahead of Esther? Esther had already shown remarkable faith and courage. She had come before the king to protect her people from a plot to wipe them all out. So far, she had met with success, but greater challenges lay ahead. She had to convince this proud monarch that his most trusted advisor was a wicked man who had duped him into condemning Esther's people to death. How would she persuade him? And what can we learn from her faith? She wisely chose a time to speak. Paragraphs 5 and 6, question A. How did Esther apply the principle found at Ecclesiastes 3, 1 and 7? Question B. How did Esther's way of approaching her husband prove wise? Should Esther have revealed to the king the whole problem in front of his court? Doing so might have humiliated him and given his advisor Haman time to dispute her charges. So what did Esther do? Centuries earlier, wise King Solomon was inspired to write, "For everything there is an appointed time, a time to keep quiet and a time to speak." Ecclesiastes 3, 1 and 7. We may imagine Esther's adoptive father, the faithful man Mordecai, teaching the young woman such principles as she grew up under his care. Esther certainly understood the importance of choosing carefully the time to speak. Esther said, "If to the king it does seem good, let the king with Haman come today to the banquet that I have made for him." Esther 5:4. The king agreed and had Haman summoned. Can you see how wisely Esther spoke? She preserved her husband's dignity and created a more suitable setting for revealing her concerns to him.
Proverbs 10:19 reads, "In the abundance of words there does not fail to be transgression, but the one keeping his lips in check is acting discreetly."
Paragraphs 7 and 8, question. What was Esther's first banquet like? Yet why did she delay in speaking up to the king? No doubt Esther prepared that feast carefully, seeing to it that in every detail she catered to her husband's preferences. The banquet included fine wine to encourage a happy mood. Ahasuerus enjoyed himself, and he was moved to ask Esther again what her petition might be. Was this now the time to speak? Esther thought not. Rather, she invited the king and Haman to come to a second banquet on the following day. Why did she delay? Remember, all of Esther's people were facing death by the king's decree. With so much at stake, Esther had to be sure that the time was right. So she waited, creating yet another opportunity to show her husband how highly she regarded him. Paragraph 9 question. What is the value of patience, and how can we imitate Esther's example in this regard? Patience is a rare and precious quality. Though distressed and eager to speak her mind, Esther patiently waited for the right moment. We can learn much from her example, for all of us have likely seen wrongs that need to be put right. If we seek to convince someone in authority to address a problem, we may need to imitate Esther and be patient. Proverbs 25:15 says, "By patience a commander is induced, and a mild tongue itself can break a bone." If we wait patiently for the right moment and speak mildly, as Esther did, even opposition as hard as bone may be broken. Did Esther's God, Jehovah, bless her patience and wisdom? Patience paves the way for justice. Paragraphs 10 and 11 question. Why did Haman's mood change after he left the first banquet, and what did his wife and friends urge him to do? Esther's patience paved the way for a remarkable chain of events. Haman left the first banquet in high spirits, joyful and merry of heart, that the king and queen favored him so. As Haman passed through the castle gate, though, his eyes fell on Mordecai, that Jew who still refused to pay him special homage. As we noted in the preceding chapter, Mordecai's reasons had nothing to do with disrespect, but rather with his conscience and his relationship with Jehovah God. Yet, Haman was immediately filled with rage. Esther 5:9. When Haman told his wife and friends of this slight, they urged him to prepare a huge steak, over 72 feet tall, and then to ask the king's permission to hang Mordecai on it. Haman liked their idea and immediately set about the task. Paragraph 12 question. Why did the king have the official records of state read aloud to him, and what did he learn as a result? Meanwhile, the king had an unusual night. The king's sleep fled, the Bible tells us. So he had the official records of state read aloud to him. The reading included the report of an assassination plot against Ahasuerus. He remembered the affair. The would-be murderers were caught and executed. What, though, about the man who had exposed the plot, Mordecai? Suddenly alert, the king asked how Mordecai had been rewarded. The answer? Nothing at all had been done for the man.
Esther 6:1-3 reads, "During that night the king's sleep fled. Therefore he said to bring the book of the records of the affairs of the times. Thus there came to be a reading of them before the king. At length there was found written what Mordecai had reported concerning Bigthana and Teresh, two court officials of the king, doorkeepers, who had sought to lay hand on King Ahasuerus. Then the king said, 'What honor and great thing has been done to Mordecai for this?' To this the king's attendants, his ministers, said, 'Nothing has been done with him.'"
Paragraphs 13 and 14 question A. How did things start to go wrong for Haman? Question B. What did Haman's wife and friends tell him? Agitated, the king asked what court officials were available to help him correct this oversight. Of all people, Haman was in the king's court, early it seems, because he was eager to secure permission to execute Mordecai. But before Haman could make his request, the king asked him how best to honor a man who had won the king's favor. Haman assumed that the king had him in mind. So Haman devised a lavish honor. Clothe the man in royal garb, and have a high official parade him around Shushan on the king's own horse, calling out the man's praises for all to hear. Imagine the expression on Haman's face when he learned that the man to be honored was Mordecai. And whom did the king assign to sing out Mordecai's praises? Haman. Haman grudgingly carried out what to him was an odious duty, and then rushed home in distress. His wife and friends said that this turn of events could only bode ill. He was bound to fail in his fight against Mordecai the Jew. Paragraph 15, Question A. What good came of Esther's patience? Question B. Why is it wise for us to show a waiting attitude? Because Esther was patient, waiting that one extra day to present her request to the king, Haman was given time to lay the basis for his own downfall. And might not Jehovah God have been behind the king's sleeplessness? Little wonder that God's word encourages us to show a waiting attitude.
Micah 7:7 reads, "But as for me, it is for Jehovah that I shall keep on the lookout. I will show a waiting attitude for the God of my salvation. My God will hear me."
When we wait on God, we may find that His solutions to our problems far exceed anything that we might have devised ourselves. She spoke up bravely. Paragraphs 16 and 17, Question A. When did Esther's time to speak come? Question B. How did Esther differ from Vashti, the king's former wife? Esther dared not test the king's patience any further. At her second banquet, she had to tell all. But how? As it turned out, the king gave her the opportunity, asking again what her petition might be. Esther's time to speak had come. We may imagine Esther saying a silent prayer to her God before uttering these words, "If I have found favor in your eyes, O king, and if to the king it does seem good, let there be given me my own soul at my petition, and my people at my request." Esther 7:3. Notice that she assured the king that she respected his judgment regarding what seemed good. How Esther differed from Vashti, the king's former wife, who had purposely humiliated her husband. Further, Esther did not criticize the king for his folly of trusting in Haman. Rather, she begged the king to protect her from a danger to her own life. Paragraph 18, Question. How did Esther reveal the problem to the king? That request surely moved and amazed the king. Who would dare endanger his queen? Esther went on, "We have been sold, I and my people, to be annihilated, killed, and destroyed. Now if we had been sold for mere men slaves and for mere maid servants, I should have kept silent. But the distress is not appropriate when with damage to the king." Esther 7:4. Note that Esther frankly exposed the problem, yet she added that she would have kept quiet about it if mere slavery had been the threat. This genocide, though, would be too costly to the king himself to keep quiet about it. Paragraph 19, Question. What can we learn from Esther about the art of persuasion? Esther's example teaches us much about the art of persuasion. If you ever need to lay bare a serious problem to a loved one, or even to a person in authority, a combination of patience, respect, and candor can be of great help. Paragraphs 20 and 21, Question A. How did Esther expose Haman, eliciting what reaction from the king? Question B. How did Haman act when exposed as a scheming coward? Ahasuerus demanded, "Who is this, and just where is the one who has emboldened himself to do that way?" Imagine Esther pointing a finger as she said, "The man, the adversary and enemy, is this bad Haman." Esther 7:5-7. The accusation hung in the air. Terror filled Haman. Picture the volatile monarch's face coloring as he realized that his trusted advisor had duped him into signing an order that would destroy his own beloved wife. The king stormed out into the garden to regain his composure. Haman, exposed as the scheming coward that he was, groveled at the queen's feet. When the king came back into the room and saw Haman on Esther's couch pleading with her, he angrily accused Haman of attempting to rape the queen in the king's own home. That sounded the death knell for Haman. He was taken away, his face covered. One of the king's officials then spoke up, telling the king of the huge stake that Haman had intended for Mordecai. Ahasuerus immediately ordered that Haman himself be hanged on it. Paragraph 22 question. How can Esther's example teach us never to despair, turn cynical, or lose faith? In today's unjust world, it is easy to imagine that we will never see justice done. Have you ever felt that way? Esther never despaired, never turned cynical, never lost faith. When the time came, she spoke up bravely for what was right, and she trusted in Jehovah to do the rest. Let us do the same. Jehovah has not changed since Esther's day. He is still more than able to catch the wicked and cunning in their own traps, just as he did Haman.
Psalm 7:11-16 reads, God is a righteous judge, and God is hurling denunciations every day. If anyone will not return, his sword he will sharpen, his bow he will certainly bend, and he will make it ready for shooting. And for himself he must prepare the instruments of death, his arrows he will make flaming ones. Look, there is one that is pregnant with what is hurtful, and he has conceived trouble and is bound to give birth to falsehood. A pit he has excavated, and he proceeded to dig it. But he will fall into the hole that he went making. His trouble will return upon his own head, and upon the crown of his head his own violence will descend.
She acted unselfishly for Jehovah and for his people. Paragraph 23, question A. How did the king reward Mordecai and Esther? Question B. How was Jacob's deathbed prophecy over Benjamin fulfilled? At last, the king learned who Mordecai was, not only his loyal protector against assassination, but also the adoptive father of Esther. Ahasuerus bestowed Haman's position as prime minister on Mordecai. Haman's house, including his immense fortune, the king gave to Esther, who placed Mordecai over it. Paragraphs 24 and 25, question A. Why could Esther not relax after Haman's plot was exposed? Question B. How did Esther risk her life once more? Now that Esther and Mordecai were safe, could the queen relax? Only if she were selfish. At that moment, Haman's decree to kill all the Jews was making its way to every corner of the empire. Haman had cast lots, or pur, evidently a form of spiritism, to determine the opportune time to carry out this vicious attack. The day was yet months away, but it was fast approaching. Could disaster still be averted? Esther unselfishly risked her life again, appearing before the king once more without an official invitation. This time, she wept for her people, pleading with her husband to revoke the terrible edict. But laws passed in the Persian monarch's name could not be revoked. So the king empowered Esther and Mordecai to enact a new law. A second proclamation was sent out, giving the Jews the right to defend themselves. Riders sped to every part of the empire, taking this good news to the Jews. Hope was kindled anew in many hearts. We may imagine the Jews throughout that vast empire arming themselves and preparing for battle, which they could never have done without that new edict. More important, though, would Jehovah of armies be with his people? 1 Samuel 17:45. Paragraphs 26 and 27, question A. How great and how thorough was the victory that Jehovah gave his people over their enemies? Question B. What prophecy was fulfilled by the destruction of Haman's sons? When the chosen day finally came, God's people were ready. Even many Persian officials were on their side now, as news had traveled far and wide about the new prime minister Mordecai the Jew. Jehovah gave his people a great victory. He no doubt protected his people from terrible reprisals by handing their enemies a thorough defeat. The footnote reads, "The king allowed the Jews a second day to finish their conquest of their enemies." Even today, the Jews commemorate that victory each year in the month of Adar, which corresponds to late February and early March. The festival is called Purim, named after the lots that Haman cast in his quest to destroy Israel. End of footnote. Furthermore, Mordecai would never be safe to preside over Haman's house while the 10 sons of that evil man still lived. They too were killed. A Bible prophecy was thus fulfilled, for God had earlier foretold the complete destruction of the Amalekites, who had proved to be wicked enemies of his people. The sons of Haman may well have been among the very last of that condemned nation. Paragraphs 28 and 29, question A. Why was it Jehovah's will for Esther and her people to be involved in warfare? Question B. Why is Esther's example a blessing for us today? Esther had to take on her young shoulders her share of very heavy burdens, such as royal edicts involving war and execution. It could not have been easy, but Jehovah's will required that his people be protected from destruction. The nation of Israel was to produce the promised Messiah, the one source of hope for all mankind. Servants of God today are delighted to know that when the Messiah Jesus came to the earth, he forbade his followers from that time forward to take part in physical warfare. Nonetheless, Christians do engage in spiritual warfare. Satan is ever more eager to destroy our faith in Jehovah God.
2 Corinthians 10:3 and 4 reads, "For though we walk in the flesh, we do not wage warfare according to what we are in the flesh. For the weapons of our warfare are not fleshly, but powerful by God for overturning strongly entrenched things."
What a blessing to have Esther as an example. Like her, may we show faith by our wise and patient use of persuasion, by our courage, and by our unselfish willingness to stand up for God's people. Questions about Esther. Why did Mordecai allow Esther to marry a pagan unbeliever? There is no basis for the suggestion of some scholars that Mordecai was an opportunist who wanted Esther to wed the king for the sake of prestige. As a faithful Jew, he would not have favored such a marriage. Ancient Jewish tradition holds that Mordecai tried to prevent the marriage. It seems unlikely that either he or Esther, mere foreigners in a land ruled by an autocrat who held a godlike status, would have had much choice in the matter. In time, it became clear that Jehovah used Esther's marriage as a means of protecting his people. Why does the book of Esther contain no mention of God's personal name, Jehovah? Mordecai was evidently the inspired writer of the book. Perhaps the book was at first kept with official Persian records before it was taken to Jerusalem. The use of Jehovah's name might have moved worshippers of the Persian gods to destroy the book. In any case, Jehovah's involvement in the story is clear. Interestingly, God's personal name is contained in the original Hebrew text by means of acrostics, wherein the phrasing appears to have been arranged deliberately, so that the first or the last letters of successive words spell out God's name. Is the Book of Esther historically inaccurate? Critics level that charge against the book. However, some scholars have noted that the writer of the book showed a remarkably detailed knowledge of Persian royalty, architecture, and customs. True, no mention of Queen Esther has been found in surviving secular documents, but Esther would hardly be the only royal personage who was erased from public records. What is more, secular records do show that a man named Marduka, a Persian equivalent of Mordecai, served as a court official in Shushan at the time described in the book. A prophecy fulfilled. In fighting for God's people, Esther and Mordecai fulfilled an ancient Bible prophecy. Over a dozen centuries earlier, Jehovah inspired the patriarch Jacob to foretell regarding one of his sons, "Benjamin will keep on tearing like a wolf. In the morning, he will eat the animal seized, and at evening, he will divide spoil." Genesis 49:27. In the morning of Israel's kingly history, Benjamin's descendants included King Saul and other mighty warriors for Jehovah's people. In the evening of that royal history, after the sun had set on Israel's kingly line, Esther and Mordecai, both of the tribe of Benjamin, warred effectively against Jehovah's enemies. In a sense, they also divided spoil, and that Haman's vast estate went to them. Questions to think about. How did Esther show wisdom in choosing a time to speak? Esther's patience led to what blessings? How did Esther prove to be brave and selfless in defending her people? In what ways are you determined to imitate the faith of Esther?